session number 16064, Reel 4.
It's the turn of Reel 4. Mm-hmm. You were talking about Nicosia as compared with... Limassol compared with Nicosia.
Well, Nicosia is in the centre of Cyprus. Limassol is down on the coast and rather popular holiday resort. It was and still is a port. Now, as control, we had a division there, Limassol Division, and the headquarters was in the police station there at a place called Red House. Now, my job was control officer, where I used to have to work 24 hours on, and whatever happened in that 24 hours, I was responsible for. So if there was a gathering of the Turkish Cypriots, and they were going to have a march, then I had to be aware of it from our patrols, and take necessary action to make sure they didn't go into the Greek Cypriot area, and vice versa, because if so, there was going to be a great battles, and so on. Anything that arose where the army was concerned, or the police, or someone, then it came through me, and I would have to organise and contact the various army, Devonshires, or Argyll and Sutherlanders, whoever were there, Royal Military Police, say, look, we've got this forming, the forming up here in this area, potential riot forming or potential trouble starting here, they're going to march, we've got to do this, that, the other, and I would have to organise it all up. So we'd got, always got the incident covered. So, you know, you had to think ahead to prevent these major outbreaks, and this fell on my shoulders. And so for 24 hours, I used to work from 8 o'clock in the morning till 8 o'clock the next morning. Sleep, doors in a chair at the evening, and that, you got all your maps. The phone was always on, there's things going on all the time. Your reports coming in from patrols you had out, and they were coming into the headquarters and logs and so on. And, you know, all your maps, where everybody was, all that to keep up to date. So you was rather busy for 24 hours. The next 24 hours, no matter what happened, you were not involved. They left you completely alone. So I lived in the Palace Hotel, and they could have a riot 100 yards down the road, but I should not be called out because I was off. The second day then, if anything arose, I was on standby, so I could be called in to help out, and then back I went on to 24 hours. So for 8 months, technically, I never had a day off.
Yeah. In which of the cities was Ayoka stronger, in Nicosia or Limassol?
Oh, in Nicosia. I don't know so much in Limassol, because when I was there, Limassol, the back end of 57, it had quietened down a lot to what it was when in 1956, you know, the Ayoka day. They were still there, and the Turks were there, but it wasn't as active as it was in Nicosia. There was always something going on in Nicosia, you know, Murder Mile, shooting and killing someone, and there on the outskirts of Nicosia, you get, like, Gunyale was a Turkish Cypriot village, so if any Greek Cypriot went out there, you can guarantee he would be killed. If he went down on my feet, a Turkish Cypriot, he would get killed. You know, they were completely alien to each other. And I used to argue with them, you see. I used to say to a Turkish Cypriot, or a Turkish-speaking Cypriot, they aren't Turkish Cypriot, they're Turkish-speaking. And I used to say to him, what are you? I am a Turk. Where were you born? Ankara? Oh, no, I was born at Gunyale. So you were born in Cyprus then? So you're a Cypriot. You're a Turkish-speaking Cypriot. And I'd get on another lad who was in the place, what are you? Oh, I'm a Greek. So where were you born? Athens? No, I was born on my feet, I was born near Nicosia. So you're Greek-speaking Cypriot then? You're a Cypriot, you're a British subject, same as me. I said, what the hell do you want to throw bloody rocks at me for? I ain't throwing them at you. You're Cypriot, what's all the trouble, you know? And I used to try to talk to them that way. And I think some of them used to see the funny point of it, say, oh yeah, you're right there, sir. I said, no, but it was Shouses, Turkish Sazan. Yeah, no, I said, no, I'm right. I suppose in our own way we tried to do our better, make better relations, didn't we? You know, and that, this was the object. And I found, as I say, up in the mountains, the relationship that the Royal Marines had with the local villagers, and that was tremendous and really, really great. And the majority of the security forces out there had great good relationship with the majority of the villages they were in, you know, lived in. And it was just their hardcore Ioka who was there. They wanted Ennesis union with Greece, and they were going to have it. And I've sat in a schoolroom, in a village school, and looked at a map of the Mediterranean, you know, Italy, and I've looked at the map, and I thought, there's something wrong with this map. Something wrong. Cyprus has now taken the place of Rhodes. It's moved over 200 miles, you know, to be near Greece. When you look at a map and you think, well, out in the Panhandle, which is off the coast of Turkey, and it was off here, you know, and that's been moved. And you said, there's something wrong with this map. And of course, they're educating the kids that you are Greeks, and then you are Turks. Yeah, I said, why don't you have a bloody flag of your own? Turkish Cypriot. You know, your Cypriot flag. That'd be far better.
It must have been difficult for the Greek and Turkish policemen in the force.
Oh, yes. Well, it was, because I think when I was up in the mountains, I had only one Turkish Cypriot, Bihal, who was my bodyguard, Batman, and so on. So he was with me most of the time. But they didn't have a lot to do with him, because they were all Greek Cypriots, the Greek speaking Cypriot police officers. Sergeant Stamateros and all the Greeks were up in the village. In Nicosia, then I worked with the Ozel, who was a Turkish speaking Cypriot, who was an interpreter. And that. So in the car, we had no Greek Cypriot, except the only Greek Cypriots I worked with was the ex Ioka chaps. On occasions when I did do uniform, in a Land Rover, you might have a couple of Greek Cypriot police officers and a couple of Turkish, and that. But then they seemed to work together. Well, they had to do, because you know you were in charge and they did what they were told by you, and that. So you had quite a, but I suppose off duty they would never socialise, which was a class of religion, isn't it? This is basically what all the trouble is, and that. Which was a pity, really, because I've often remarked Cyprus, a beautiful island populated by bloody idiots, as far as I was concerned. You know, and the monasteries, one of the first jobs I ever did in Nicosia was raid a monastery in Nicosia. And the stuff I found in one of those cabins that the monks live in, you know, you think of priests and monks as we thought of them in England. You know, straight upright guys, don't you? You know, but, and that. Anyway, and then I found some of the stuff I found in there, the pornography I found in there. Well, this is not right. This is not right. This is what you found in there. And,
did you find any Ioka?
Oh, we found Ioka
material in the monastery.
Ioka leaflets in one of the monasteries. Some Ioka leaflets and a printing machine in one of them. This was on the outskirts of Nicosia on one occasion. And it's just a raid we did on this monastery, and this Gestetner machine, and some Ioka leaflets being printed. They were involved with the Greek Orthodox Church in it. I did write a book, you know, about the life out there, all of which quite a lot of you've got on tape. I called it Copper in Kyprio, because copper, there are copper mines in Cyprus, and Kyprio is a Greek word for Cyprus, so it was a byplay on word. And all the people I met and worked with and so on are mentioned in there. And I did say that the Greek Orthodox Church was involved in this. And unfortunately, Hale said, very well written, but we just didn't publish it. And this was at the time when Cyprus was just about to get its own independence, so I can understand that. And people often say, why don't you have it published again? I say, oh, what's the use? It's years have gone now, it's gone by, and that it's over and forgotten with. I wish it had been, because it might have opened a few people's eyes to realise just what did happen. And one of the funniest incidents I had, I did meet Jimmy Wheeler. You know Jimmy Wheeler, the comedian? He used to be on the thing.
Yes.
And This Is Your Lot. Him. And I was with an ex-Marine major called Brickwood. Have you heard of Major Brickwood? Well, I knew when he worked on the UDT in the beach unit. And I was in a bar in Nicosia, and I wore a middle-aged with the Marine badge on. And you know when you're under observation, you know when people are staring at you. And I knew I was under observation. Now I always sit, I like to sit with my back to a wall, everything. I like to see what's going on in front of me. I don't like people behind me. And maybe I'm a bit suspicious, but I prefer a knife in the front than in the back. And I was sat in this bar, in the Domino Bar in Nicosia, used by a lot of expats. And I knew I was under observation. And I looked through the mirror and I met this chap's eyes. And I thought, I know you. And he came round and he said, I see you belong to the Honourable Regiment. And I said, since one of the Royal Marines being a regiment mate? He said, it isn't you, is it, Jack? I said, yes, it is. I said, is it you, Bricky? He said, yes, come with me. So round the bar I went, there's a lady sat there. He said, do you remember me, Ted, when I was on the beach unit, talking about a corporal? He used to be the bane of my life. So she said, oh, yes. She said, this is him. I said, oh, thank you very much, you know. And so I said, down there. And he was now Major Brickwood, you know, Brickwood Breweries. And I said, what the hell are you doing out there? And he was out there to buy the wines and something representing the pub in Tyford. And Penny, his wife, had just had a load of money left for some property that sold in India. So I used to go out to their bungalow, invited up for dinner and so on with Penny and Bricky. And that was nice. And on one night, the night they released Makarios, which was in March 1957. And they were going round town, and all you could hear on the con, bump, 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 Zito Macario, Zito Macario, Zito, meaning long live and all this. And this was paraded down the town. And our job that night on Q Patrol was to go in the bars to make sure no expats started umps, or any soldiers got in the bars to create any trouble. So our job was to go in as peacemakers kind of thing, to see no trouble arose. And I went into one of the bars, and Penny was sat there on her own. And I said, where's Bricky? She said, oh, I don't know, he's gone off. I don't know where he's gone, Jack. I said, well, you're not stopping here on your own, because anything can happen. You better, oh, no, I'll stay with you. I said, no, come on, I'll see you again. No, I'm going to stop. I said, I'm on duty at 2 in the morning. I don't care, I'm stopping with you. So every bar we went into, this Bricky had been in and gone. So I'm lumbered with his wife in the back of a patrol car on duty. I can't do out about it. I can't get rid of it. I'm on duty. I had to keep going to these bars. Anyway, we finished at 2, and I said, well, I think we all deserve a drink. So Bushy said, yeah, good idea. So we went into a bar, the Chantilly or somewhere, the Cosmo Club, I forget which one, the Cosmo Club. About 2 o'clock, where we sit on the bar, and I met then a US Marine sergeant who I'd met previously, and he was on the consulate, and I had lived in Philadelphia in 41 in the US Marine barracks when he was there. So we had been, we didn't know each other then, but it was shows what a small world it was. And I'd lived with the US Marines in 41 in Philadelphia. And he was there, Penny, Bushy and I. And in walks Jimmy Wheeler, who was out doing a show for the Answer, you know. And he walked, and Penny said to me, oh, he's a funny looking chap, isn't he? I said, yeah, it's Jimmy Wheeler. She said, it isn't. And I said, I'll just bet you £1 to £10. It is. So when this chap came out from the gents, I went across to him and said, excuse me, are you or not Jimmy Wheeler? He said, yeah, I'm Jimmy Wheeler. I said, come and tell this lady who you are, will you? So we went out to this Penny and he said, I said, will he tell you who you are? I said, yeah, I'm Jimmy Wheeler. I said, told you, £10 on the counter. So he said, now what? I said, we don't leave till we drank all this. So we finished up having a meal and drinks. And then at 5 o'clock, I said, I'm going to take you home. By this time, Jimmy Wheeler's mother's flaked out in a chair with Bushy. I said, I'll come back for you two. So I took her home to her bungalow. Bushy and Bricky was at home. So put her into her bungalow and left her. Went back to pick Bushy up and Jimmy Wheeler. And the artist usually stayed at a new Cleopatra Hotel in Nicosia. So we took him there and found he did. He was this time flaked out. So we put him in, undid his shoes, tie, put him into bed and left him. And of course we were back on duty at 9 that morning, and so I said about 11 o'clock, I thought, we'd better go find out if he's still alive, but you know, it's laid in his back, has he choked to death? We'd better go find out. So we went there and found his room, and I knocked on the door, and he opened one eye like, and I said, are you all right? He said, I am. Told us to leave, which we did. And he came back home to England, and later, and he said, it was in the paper, that he'd been out visiting the security force in Cyprus, and what a great time he'd had. He said, and you say the British police officers are wonderful in this country. He said, you wait till you get out to Cyprus. The better still. He said, they meet you, take you out, get you drunk, put you home to bed and come around next morning, see if you're all right. That could have killed him. I wouldn't have been involved in that. But this was the, you know, the job you did. It was some of the funny parts.
You don't give the impression that there was a lot of danger to British civilians wandering about in Cyprus in 1957.
There was, yeah. See, if the ladies walked down the street, they would get spit on and stuff. The army officers in incognito, ambushes were done. And we had, had bombs thrown at me on three occasions and tried to ambush the Q patrol. Oh, there was lots of danger about and that. But, I mean, we were prepared for it. We got a lot of civilians. When they threw a bomb at our Q patrol car going to work one morning, and I was sat behind the driver. Our inspector was sat in alongside the driver, and the three of us in the back, and I was sat behind the driver on the offside. As we went down this road, over the wall, I saw this pipe bomb come and land on the road. And it landed, as our driver braked to a halt, I shot out of the vehicle, because pulling up opposite was a taxi, and a British lady, an English lady, is trying to struggle out of the driver gone, he left the vehicle. There's a lady trying to struggle out of the back of this car with a child in her arms. And I ran to the bomb, kicked it into the gutter, and carried on running, hopped into, pushed the lady back in the car, slammed the door, parked the vehicle in reverse, and drove it backwards. And that's it, the bomb had gone off and everything. So there was danger, even for a lady who was initially involved with the kid. Could have gotten killed by that bomb being thrown. And bombs were thrown at you.
Did the bomb go off?
Oh, no, when I kicked it, I must have kicked the fuse out. So it never did go off in the gutter, which was fortunate. Otherwise, maybe I'd have got peppered with shrapnel if I hadn't got in the car. Maybe the windscreen would have got wiped out. As I kicked it, the fuse dropped out, which was lucky, because it would have taken the front of our police car vehicle all day, would have got all the glass, because it all happened in a matter of seconds. But I happened to see it come out of my, I thought, God, this is coming to the air. And someone said, what the hell happened then? You won't make it out of the vehicle. Jock, I said, well, I couldn't see what was going to happen, so I did something about it. it would have certainly blown all the windscreens in and done, you know, they wouldn't have come out of it very pleasantly. But the thing you see, you've got the ambush army vehicles by putting pipe bombs in trees and exploding off batteries 100 yards out in trees. An army vehicle or ambulances were done, and they would explode them down full of nuts, bolts, screws, God knows what, with these pipe bombs, you know, they weren't fussy what they put in. And you've got, they'd run a few of those, it didn't do you any good.
What proportion of the Greek population do you think were in favour of Inosis with Greece?
Oh, I wouldn't like to say. I don't think. It's difficult to say, because a lot of pressure was put on them by the politics and, you know, the politics and that. The Eoka people and that, they were quite a lot of power, like blackmailing the people. One or two of the Greek Cypriots I did know, they were very pro-British. Apollo, who ran the Apollo cinemas and so on, he was very, very pro-British. He wanted nothing to do with it, but if he was told to close his cinema by the Eoka, he would have to close it, and it would be on us. Dr. Timbius, who I used to see, and I did used to do some recordings to my brother in America, because he belonged to some club or other, World Wild Club. My brother used to send me recordings, and he used to leave them at Decker House for me to hear. And then I could go on that, and I got to know Dr. Timbius through him. And he was under house restriction, but he was quite a nice guy, and he's a very pro-British, and his wife, kids. And a lot of his friends, they were all, the majority of the Greek Cypriot businessmen, I'd say Greek Cypriot, Greek speaking Cypriot, were very pro-British, and that, no doubt about it. But it was the ones that had been brainwashed by Samson and that ilk, and younger ones, they wanted Enosis, union with Greece. And it's been, they've been trying it for years before the Eoka days.
Did you ever run into Archbishop Macarius?
Yes, I met him on that when he was arrested, and we took him to Larnac and sent him on the ship. And that we had to go there to arrest him, and I was one of the escorting cars that took him down to Larnaca. And Harry Lancaster was one of our police sergeants, who is from Durham County Constabulary. He was involved in it, was Harry, and we went down and escorted them there to him, and the Bishop of Kittyham was arrested and taken down and then placed on a destroyer, and Harry was selected to escort them to the Seychelles. And Harry Lancaster even today wears a watch presented to him by Archbishop Macarius, thanking him for his job he did on board the ship. And he sent a signal to Sir John Harding saying, could Harry Lancaster, Sergeant Lancaster, stay with him as his personal bodyguard? And Sir John Harding said, not bloody likely. He came out here not to be your bodyguard, I want him back here. So Harry missed out on a good job. And he was there till March 57 when they released him, the government, and he came back to Cyprus. And that's when we did all the fun and games, Z2 and Macario. So I did see him and meet him, well, didn't speak to him. I did, was there present when they executed a lad called Plowerides, and that was a job he had. He was a son of a police sergeant, and he was a bomb thrower, and he had thrown a bomb and killed a lot of kids. It had bounced off an army vehicle and killed quite a number of kids, so he was down for the chop. And my job that night was to escort the commissioner, the papa, the priest, the commissioner, to the Nick Central, where the hanging was to take place. And so when we got the vehicle, Bushy was in the back, and the parson, the priest, was going to sit in the back, and the commissioner said, no, he doesn't, he sits alongside me, and between myself and the army lad does the papa. And the commissioner said, oh, he's all right at the back, sir. I said, he sits alongside me. You can sit in the back with Bushy, he'll look after you, but he sits alongside me, does the papa. Why? I said, well, if any bloody rocks are coming through this windscreen, he's having his share. So he sits alongside me, and he's going to sit there prominent so they can see him. Now, our number of our vehicle was passed to the guards who were on duty at Nicosia, so we could go through. And we drove up, and outside the central was quite a few hundred people who were well aware that these hangings were about to take place. And we drove in, we had to go very, very slowly through. So I made sure the papa was very prominent as we drove through. We got into Nick Central and then parked in and had a coffee and so on. And then my vehicle was parked near the execution chamber when they marched these two clients across. It was a double hanging, actually. The hangman came out from England, I think. And they, you know, rigged them all up. And the last one that spoke to him was Adio Campari when they pulled the lever, which means goodbye, my friend. And down they went, and then they leave them. And I was sat in the vehicle listening to dance music from Radio Israel when Lieutenant Mackay, who had been concerning this, came across. He said, you're a callous bee. I said, why? He said, they've just hung two blokes and they're listening to dance music. I said, didn't know me. I couldn't care less. He said, oh, they've got some coffee and sandwiches on for. I said, now that's more in my line. So so that was a but it was done, they deserved to hang, and that's all they hung. Palerides, I forget the name of the other guy, but they hung them both together. It was a double hanging.
Did they make any political demonstration before they were hanged?
Oh, there was quite a number of this before.
No, I mean the people who were
outside
victims.
Outside the, well, if they had, maybe before we arrived possibly, but it was quiet, well, not quiet, but they were there with lots of mumbling and jumbling and all like this. And I suppose if we hadn't have had the parsons, maybe we might have had a few rocks to our windscreens.
No, but I mean, the two chaps who were hanged, did they make any political demonstration?
No, I couldn't. I couldn't say, because when they marched them across from the cell, I was in the courtyard. So what had happened in the prison, I've no idea. I was outside, and I just went in to see the hanging. That was all. I'd never seen any before. And I thought, well, go have a look. Nothing to stop you. So I went in to just see what happened.
Was it done humanely?
No, yes. You know, pulled. That's it. Over, went over the same as doing it. Down the wind. Adio compari crash.
Did they die quickly?
I've no idea. Because they disappeared, you see. Disappeared. No idea at all.
I'm thinking of the sharp end of the work that you were in Cyprus. You talked about that riot in Pedulos when you got hit.
Yeah.
You talked about the bomb, the pipe bomb that was thrown at the vehicle. Were there any other incidents when you came near to injury?
Oh, I don't know. I can't think of any offhand. I can't think. Well, every day when you were out, you were under pressure and had to be alert because things could arise very, very quickly. I was never attacked. I never had a bullet fired near me, you know, attacked that way. I did, when I was in the mountains, I did, after when I left, went back, I came back off leave, and I was supposed to go back to Pedulus. I went to headquarters and I said, no way am I going back to Pedulus. I've been done me in the riots. I'm not going back there. So they've shipped me to Limassol. And a lad called Lynch took over, and he was only out there for a period of 3 months. And I met him, and I said, I went up to Platteras to collect my kit and so on, and met him. And I said, on the way here, on your way down to Pedulus, watch this junction, because you've got to go down the mountainside and you come back 135 degree turn. So you've got to get right down to second gear because you're turning and climbing uphill. I said, and if I was a tourist, that is the best place to do an ambush, because you've got to slow right down to get by, and that's it. And 6 weeks after that, they shot and they put 5 bullets in the windscreen, and one went right to his forehead. He was killed right at the spot I said it would happen. And that's what I said previously. When I was in the mountains, the Yorker could have taken me any time they wanted me, because I was the only one there. So for a matter of 8 months, I could have been gone any day. And that, you know, you were there, you were trying to do your job. And I tried to avoid being ambushed in the mountains, especially because I used to come back different ways. I'd, you know, go out one way and come back a different way. So if they're waiting for me, they're going to start a damn long wait. When we went to Spelia, we had an after bloke called Asiotis, when I stopped some Marines being blown up there, and he was captured in a cave, and they went charging up, and I got there on the same time, because I've been concerned in this, and we'd done a cordon round this search, and a few bullets went in and so on. And Asiotis, who was the leader of a killer group in the mountains, came out with his hands up. And they were charging, and I got there, and I said, for God's sake, don't go in the cave till it's been searched, because I said, knowing these bees, they'll have ambushed it. They'll set it up. And the Royal Ordnance Corps came up, some officers there, I think, not Bomber Harris, because I worked with him in Nicosia as well. He came along, the army officers, and checked, and they had. It set up a cigar box, which was a booby trap. Stand on that, you broke a match, and it caused a fuse, and up went the whole thing. It would have blown all the caving on them. So by going in, stopping them going in, stopped a few being possibly being ambushed. And that's all. That was a thing in Nicosia when the from information we had, a police inspector was strongly suspected of being a member of the Yoka. And we did a search of his bungalow, and it's a beautiful bungalow. And we searched his bungalow and couldn't find a thing. And I was in the kitchen, it had a tile floor. And in the tile was a little mark in where the joining, in the corner. And there was like a hole. And I put my knife down, and it went down. Oh, that's funny, you know, there's no dirt or anything scraping. And having removed the boat from the side, I found the corresponding one. And by putting two things in, we were able to leave it, and we pulled out the tiles, which led us into an underground basin. Yeah. And in there we found lots of arms, weeping gelatin of mines that they had been covered, all underneath the tell, arms, ammunition, some which the forensic